Back to Mark Tester now and how he's helping to solve a major problem that farmers are facing now and in the future: increasing soil salinity. Salt doesn't give plants high blood pressure, but it does lead to an early death.
The main application for my research is to improve crop production around the world. We all know we need more food, and we're needing to produce more food in the face of a changing climate. And saline soils are one of the major limitations of crop productivity. Perhaps a third of the world's food is grown using irrigated conditions. And we all know water is becoming a scarcer resource, and the quality of the water is going down. And it's a problem already, and perhaps more importantly, it's going to be an increasing problem. It's estimated a fifth of the world's irrigated land is significantly affected by salinity, and it's getting worse.
Is this because when we consistently put water out of rivers and things on land, and that water may contain a small amount of salt, as that gets consumed by the plants or by evaporation, the salt is left behind, so the soil over time progressively deteriorates?
Yes, that's exactly right, Chris. And also, we put water on, you tend to put too much water on, and it seeps back down into the waterway from which you pumped the water, and it's going through soil, which is often has a small number of salts. So you also get a recirculation of salt building up and building up over time.
And what does that do to the plants? Why won't they grow on salty soil?
Yeah, there's a few reasons. The main one is that plants try to keep the salt out. In fact, plants are pretty good at keeping most of the salt out, but because there's so much there beating at the door of the plant's roots, the plants struggle to keep it all out. And over time, the salt accumulates up in the shoot and leads to premature aging of the leaves. And so the plant, which has put all that energy into growing all those leaves, loses them. They die before the plant's got its money's worth out of those leaves. And so you get the plant being ground down because of this premature death of its leaves, just due to the simple build-up of the salt.
So presumably, I mean, one way to tackle this is to, first of all, start to look for plants that do grow quite well on salty or salt-contaminated soils, and then ask how they deal with it.
Yes, there's a couple of ways. You've just described what we would call a forward genetic approach, a genetic approach where we look for natural variation and then understand the molecular basis, you know, what molecules, what genes are different in the plants which have got those differences in salinity. And we certainly do that. The other approach is to try to understand the processes, the mechanisms that plants are employing to try to keep the salt out of the shoots, and then see if you can manipulate those processes using genetic modification.
And is that what you've done?
Yes. The reality is you actually do a bit of both, and you combine the two techniques, and they meet in the middle, which is actually the way we did it. There are genes that encode proteins that transport sodium, and one of these genes allows the sodium to move into cells. And what it was doing, it was actually doing it in the cells that were immediately around the pipes, they're called xylem vessels, that move the water from the roots to the shoots. So the plant tries to keep the sodium out, but then some sodium eventually reaches these pipes that are in the center of the roots, taking the water to the shoot. And it's like a last-ditch rescue process by the plants, where they say, look, that sodium's in those pipes, we can't let it get to the shoot or we're in real trouble. And so it lets the sodium back into the cells that are immediately surrounding the pipes. And that slows, or in some cases stops, the sodium actually reaching the shoots. And what we did was develop techniques which allowed us to increase the levels of expression of that gene immediately around those cells that are buried right in the heart of the root, to increase this retrieval of sodium out of the water on its way up to the shoot. And that's made the plant salt tolerant.
So how did you do that rather clever trick of making that gene only get turned on in those cells around the xylem vessels? Because that's the breakthrough step, isn't it, really?
Yes, it is. There's different ways you can do this. One is to try to discover little bits of DNA which will activate genes in specific parts of the plant. So that's one way you can do it, a very direct way. In the meantime, we were using a model plant. It's called Arabidopsis. It's a silly little weed, but you can do lots of really nice molecular genetics with it. And what we did was throw into the genome of this little plant, this little weed, a little bit of DNA, which will allow us to turn on genes. But we threw it on at random in the genome, made thousands of these plants, and then looked at the plants to find ones which had the right pattern of expression. So the initial generation of the plants was random, and then we looked to find plants which had, by fluke, this bit of DNA landing in a part of the genome that would activate that gene only in the inner half of the root.
Big question, though, Mark, must be, of course, it's one thing to do this in Thalecress, the plant scientist fruit fly, but we don't eat that. So what about things that we do eat? Could you put this same genetic combination into rice, into barley, wheat, and so on, the kinds of things we do rely on for food staples?
Absolutely, Chris. We have done this in rice, and the results are looking very promising. We look like we've worked out how to reduce the sodium concentration. Well, we have reduced the sodium concentration in the shoots of rice, and we're in the process of testing the effect of that on yield. The first experiments did improve yield, but we're just wanting to, again, be fairly conservative rather than just shooting off results rapidly. But it's looking very promising. To turn the genes on in wheat and barley, maize, it's actually quite difficult because these molecular genetic tricks that we're able to use on Arabidopsis, we just simply can't do. We're technically not able to do it in wheat and barley. So what we're doing now is having a program to discover the promoters that would help us turn this on. So going back to a very direct but slower way of manipulating expression in wheat and barley. We actually have transgenic plants in the glasshouse at the moment for wheat and barley, and we're limited by bulking up the seed, and we're just at that stage at the moment. So keep your fingers crossed for us, and hopefully in a year's time we'll be able to say if we've done it in the other crops as well.
What about safety, though? Because we're already worried about rice because of things like arsenic. Could fiddling around with the way the plant handles certain salts like this have implications for the accumulation in the plant of other things that are not good for us, as well as giving us food, we'll end up eating something we shouldn't?
Yes, that's a good question. Unfortunately, we have analytical technologies here in Adelaide to measure a large number of different elements, and we have checked that. And it's quite extraordinary. This transporter is very specific for transporting sodium, and it's only one other element that we've measured has an altered, has differences in its accumulation. That's potassium, which is really not going to affect the nutrition of the plants very much at all. We generally only eat the grain, and the grains don't get affected at all, even their sodium.
Mark Tester with a way to make plants grow better on salty soil.
From protons to photons and gluons to muons, the Naked Scientists. Science that's fundamentally more fun.